Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of Scattershot. Is that Baker's Dozen? It's not, is it?
Yep.
What's good with 12? What's the number of 12?
12 Angry Men.
12 Angry Men, there we go. 12 Angry Men, not a horror film. which is an interesting segue.
They were very angry, though.
They are. Oh, they're furious. Furious about justice and injustice. Well, welcome to episode 12 of Scattershot. Yes. My name is Alan Porter.
I'm Colin Briscoe.
And this is, as promised, the second half of our top five each horror movies. Thank you for listening so far. Thanks for your suggestions of things over the last week or so. Always very welcome. Please do remember to send us more stuff. We're always happy to respond. This series, and indeed the last one of comic movies, was suggested by friend of Scattershot,
Nigel White.
Friend of Scattershot, Nigel White, and he is. If he's listening, thank you very much, Nigel. And we hope that the next five films, or next four films.
Well, there's one on here that he'll definitely love of yours. Yeah, brilliant, without a doubt.
The next four films we're going to go, because we've got some overlap. Hope you'll all enjoy. So kick it off with no further ado, Colin. Your next one.
American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
What a film.
Absolutely.
1981. It was shot. It was directed by John Landis. Stars David Norton, Jenny Agutter, and Griffin Dunn. And it's about two American tourists who are backpacking across Europe.
Yep.
And they end up in Yorkshire in the moors.
Gutted.
Yeah. I mean, what a fucking place to end up for two poor Americans backpacking.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they end up going to a pub called The Slaughtered Lamb.
Yep.
And in there, one of the famous lines ever, as they start talking about weird shit, that someone, they go, "What's that 5-pointed star on the wall?" And they're playing darts, and someone misses a dart, and he goes, "I've never missed a dart in my life." And you think, "You're in the wrong pub, lads." Even we'd be in the wrong pub if we were in there. Fucking hell, I mean, that pub's moody. Anyway, because of this, and because they're obviously werewolves about, and they don't want to. They don't want to explain everything. They tell these two kids to fuck off and stick to the roads and stay off the moors and beware of the moon. So off they get. Off they've literally thrown out this pub, and the landlady's not very happy. She's like, "You can't let them go out like that." Mm. He's like, "No, it's none of our business now." Anyway, so they get lost as they're singing and dancing themselves and having a time. They get lost, walk onto the moors, start hearing some strange
rookie
noises.
Mistake.
Rookie mistake. That is a schoolboy era. Proper schoolboy era. Anyway, and this they get attacked by this werewolf, and Griffin Dunn gets absolutely ripped to shreds.
Yeah.
And his friend David just runs away. But anyway, he turns around halfway through running away, thinks, "Shit, I've left my friend." He goes back, and he gets attacked by the werewolf. But just as he's about to get absolutely slaughtered by this werewolf, he gets scratched around the face, and that the people from the pub turn up with guns, and they shoot this werewolf dead.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so David wakes up in hospital, in a London hospital, and that's it really. And it's about his transformation from human to werewolf over the coming days to the next full moon, because the next full moon is when he will change.
Yep.
And in between, he meets a nurse, falls in love with a nurse,
Jenny Agutter. And who wouldn't fall in love with Jenny Agutter?
Oh, she's stunning. She's ridiculous. She's so beautiful. And and on the way, he gets revisited by his friend Griffin Dunn in different states of decomposition, warning him that when the full moon comes, he's going to turn into this werewolf, mm-hmm. and that he should kill himself, because what he's about to become is just a eating, killing machine.
It's terrible.
Yeah. And it's just a great film. There's some fantastic imagery throughout the whole film. There's some fantastic dream sequences when he's in the hospital, of him running through forests naked, chasing a deer, and he sort of eats this deer. He catches deer and eats him and stuff. And all these dreams start. And there's a dream where he sees himself on a hospital bed, and he goes up and he almost turns to a vampire. And these are really jumpy scenes. But interspersed with all that, there's humour as well, and it's a very funny film.
Hilarious.
I mean, it is a comedy horror. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This is a comedy horror through and through. I mean, John Landis is comedy.
Mm. There's only ever been, in my opinion, there's only ever been a handful of proper horror comedy films.
Mate, they are the most difficult things to do.
Yeah.
To, I mean, horror's difficult. Comedy's really difficult.
Yeah.
To mix the two.
Yeah, it's not
like
impossible.
You said, yeah, it is almost impossible.
I mean, the only other one that comes to mind, which is of, equal sort of standing, would be Shaun of the Dead. which is funny, and it's got horror. But yeah. Even that,
Evil Dead. I'll go Evil Dead.
Yeah, Evil Dead. That's funny. But I mean, another one on top of that.
There's a couple. I mean, Cabin Fever. I really like Cabin Fever. That's a comedy horror.
Was it supposed to be funny?
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. You think? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Definitely.
Maybe I've seen that for a while.
Eli Roth film.
Yeah. Yeah.
With his skin eating disease thing. I mean, yeah. One of the dream sequences. I mean, it was three main dream sequences, but one of the best ones is when the Nazi monsters come into his family, because he's Jewish, and he has his dream, and these Nazi hunters knocking on his door and slaughtering his whole family with machine guns while they're watching the Muppets. Do you remember that at all?
Do you know what? I don't think I've seen this for such a long time. The things you're saying, I'm not even remembering.
Really? Yeah. I mean, it's just the three dream sequences are wicked, and he wakes up from that dream. And Jenny Agutter's there. She's like, "You're right. I've had a horrible dream." She goes, "Oh, well, I'll just open the blinds for you, get some light." And as she opens the blinds, there's a Nazi monster behind her, and he starts stabbing her to death. I know, it's really grim. And then he wakes up again. He's had a horror dream within a horror dream.
I love that.
Oh, and it was so good. It's so expertly done. But yeah, I mean, the most standout thing from the film is the transformation.
Yes. Never been beaten.
Never been battered.
Never been.
And I mean, this 1981, he won an Academy Award. Rick Baker. Yeah, and he won Academy Award, and it is just, it's never been better, like we said. It's just incredible, that whole sequence. I mean, the pain that he seems to go through transforming into a werewolf. And as well, the werewolf, once he's transformed, the werewolf looks wicked. He looks like a proper, nasty fucking werewolf.
It definitely looks like a cross between a wolf and a man.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that people, that any kind of werewolf or, like, werebeast kind of thing always gets wrong. It always looks like, oh, it's just like a dirty great dog.
Yeah, or a man covered in hair.
Exactly. It doesn't look like a cross between a wolf and a man.
No.
It's interesting that there's the Eli Roth series called Hemlock Grove.
Yeah, I've tried watching that.
It's pretty unwatchable.
I've tried watching it, yeah.
He said that he wanted the transformation from, like, because there's werewolves in it, to not be anything like American Werewolf in London.
Right.
Because it will never ever, no one will ever beat it.
No.
So he wanted it to be completely different. Like, he wanted it to be a birth of sorts. Where, like, you know, the wolf comes out of the person, because that's what it's metaphorically and physically doing. Which I thought was a nice approach. I'm not going to beat this. I'm not going to even try.
Which is funny. I mean, 1981, you're talking, what, nnear 30 years ago?
Yeah.
30 years ago, exactly 31 years ago, and it's still not been better. And they can't beat it.
Well, because I think that was the pinnacle of physical effects. That was kind of the bit where people were knowing what they were doing, and they'd done it long enough to do it properly. But people were trying to do it in different ways.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get into like the early to mid 90s when, you know, these kind of films weren't in favour. Horror wasn't really, there's not a great deal of horror films from that time period. But post that, it's everyone wants to do it in CG.
Yeah, which ruins it.
Yeah, which you absolutely can't do, because it just looks bullshit.
Yeah.
So physical, you got the best person doing the best physical effects, and it's genius. And as you say, I can't see it ever being beaten.
No.
Because you know it's there. It's actually on the screen.
Yeah.
It hasn't been added by some like fat Texan with a Mac in front of him.
Yeah.
Like with a hot pocket.
Oh, it's physically, they're physically doing that.
Yeah, yeah. It's an actual thing.
Yeah, and it's incredible. But going back to the horror comedy element as well. I mean, when he does transform and he goes out, the first thing he does, and it's an absolutely terrifying scene, is you see like an upper class yuppie on a deserted train track, underground train station, buying a chocolate bar, and all of a sudden he hears, and he's like, who's there, and it's horrible, and he chases, and it's wicked camera work of him being chased through the tunnels of of London Underground, and he gets to a travelator and he collapses. And then you just see the beast coming up and destroying him.
Travelator. What is your gladiators?
What do I mean?
Escalator.
We've all had a few beers now. Oh, this is the problem.
I apologize.
No, so on the escalator, he falls over and he just kills him. You don't actually see the death, but you know, and it was a terrifying scene. And what's great about that is that's a terrifying scene, and literally 10 minutes later, he's in a porno theatre being spoken to
by
his dead mate, and the people he's murdered that night, one of them being this yuppie underground traveller.
Yeah.
And he's telling him ways to kill himself before he hurts anyone else, and his bloke's freshly been mauled, and it's like horrific and funny at the same time. And And it's got a wicked payoff as well. I mean, the ending's fantastic. I mean, that's same through London, you know, Piccadilly Circus, and that it's just unreal.
It's almost a love letter to London as well.
Oh, without a doubt. And to come from American, that's great. Yeah. He said he always wanted to film it in London. He had no, I know it's called American Werewolf in London, but he wanted to film a werewolf film in London for that purpose.
Yeah,
and it's just one of my favourites of all time. It's just perfectly cast and perfectly filmed.
And the as you said, like the location is as much a character in the film as the characters are.
Yeah.
Just for the purpose of the listeners, although you know this is a horror film, let's not forget.
This is
a proper horror.
Oh yeah, it's an 18. It's well gory.
But it's directed by the director of. And I'm just going to go through this. We all know John Landis films, but I'm going to say this for the benefit of proving a point. He filmed Kentucky Fried Movie, and that's it.
No.
Animal House, The Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London, Coming Soon. That's a good film.
Innocent Blood.
Trading Places, Twilight Zone, the movie, Thriller, which Michael Jackson famously wanted this because he wanted the transformation.
Yeah, he wanted the transformation.
Thing, just
because.
Allegedly,
you can say he's dead.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You want?
Oh yeah, he touched everyone. Yeah. Spies Like Us, Three Amigos, Amazon Woman on the Moon, Coming to America. That's
really?
A fucking hardcore film as well.
Yeah.
Not horror, but you know what I mean. Oscar, that's a terrible film. Innocent Blood, as you said.
Which is quite good, actually. That was a vampire film. That was quite good, actually.
Yep. Beverly Hills Cop 3.
All right, okay. So it started going downhill then.
Yeah. The Stupids.
So definitely went downhill.
I didn't think he did Blues Brother 2000, but he
did.
Did
he?
Yeah.
See what happens. They you've only got a certain time window as a director to be good.
Yeah, he did loads of stuff with Michael Jackson. What a loser. Slasher. He did a couple of things with Masters of Horror. Have you ever seen Masters of Horror?
I've seen a few of them. Yeah.
The Cigarette Burns one is fantastic. The John Carpenter Cigarette Burns.
I must have said.
Written by Drew McQueenie and Scott Swan, who were reviewers on Ain't It Cool. And Drew McQueenie now writes for Hit Fix.
Right.
And if anyone listening to this. Wants to read an absolutely brilliant movie critic, follow Drew McQueenie on HitFix. I think his Twitter thing is Drew at HitFix, I think. But he's absolutely switched on. He knows his shit.
Yeah.
Really, really clever guy. And for anyone with kids, he also does... He's got a couple of kids and he's basically teaching them to love movies, basically. He calls it like a film nerd 2.0. I think, and he like basically gives his kids films to watch and stuff.
Don't let your kid watch this one, by the way.
Yeah, especially if they're 5 years old. And then he made Burke and Hare, that shitty film with Simon Pegg. And
I didn't mind that. Yeah. Did you not like that?
It's not for
it
me.
It's alright.
It's not for me.
Okay. But John Dan is basically comedy.
Very all the way, yeah.
And yet he's made one of the top 5 horrors of all time.
Yeah.
Which is, it's great. It's incredible, really.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
And it hasn't aged at all.
No. No, like, not at all.
You'd think, I mean, as much as we talk about how much the effects are brilliant, they are brilliant, and they haven't aged.
Yeah.
Because it still looks phenomenal. But the actual film is...
It's got a great soundtrack as well.
Yeah, totally.
Soundtrack's superb. Blue Moon and Bad Moon Rising, it's brilliant. It all ties in. It's just the perfect film.
With the exception of, like, some old cars and, you know, Jenny Agutter's old nurse outfit. Not that she's in it a great deal, thankfully. You know, it just looks as though it could be made last year. Not this year, but last year.
I loved it.
Brilliant. So, American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, I think the main thing to get out of this is if you go on London Underground, take an escalator, not a travelator, because you won't get anywhere.
Unless you're with Jet from Gladiators. Or, you know, Chris Acker. Not Chris Acker, who is it?
Justin Fashioner. No. Fight down.
My next film is Alien. In space, no one can hear you scream, or indeed,
you can't eat ice cream.
No, that is a fact.
Yeah,
it's a zero gravity, isn't it?
It's dreadful. I've tried it. It's horrible. It's everywhere.
It's too messy.
Yeah.
Gino Ginelli can't
in
do
space.
It. In space. In space, no one can hear you crunch. Alien, the classic Ridley Scott film from 1979.
Great choice.
If you're gonna ask me about what I think is the best film of the Alien franchise,
yep.
I'd say Aliens.
Yep.
But
okay.
it's not a horror.
No.
I'm just gonna get that caveat right there. That is not a horror, that is a sci-fi action film. But it's an action film.
Yeah.
With a science fiction thing. Alien is a bona fide full bore horror film. No questions asked. And as much as we spoke about American Werewolf in London being having fantastic special effects, you know, practical effects, I think Alien beats it for practical effects.
Yeah.
Because that was the... that, for me, is that feel, that terrible monster feeling.
Yeah.
Whereas American Werewolf in London, I know that, you know... I know that it's a mix of man and wolf sort of thing, and there's a human element there that kind of makes it a little bit more okay.
Yeah,
you know
okay.
what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
With Alien, it's something that you've never seen.
It's so alien. It's ridiculous.
None more alien.
No.
To coin a Spinal Tap phrase. For those of you who don't know, and of course you do, Alien is the story of a crew of
the Nostromo.
The Nostromo. Receive a distress call from alien planet.
Mm-hmm.
They're a
mining ship, aren't they?
Mining ship, yeah. And they search for survivors on the planet. And as they're going back home, they realise that they've got a passenger, an unwanted passenger.
Yeah,
no one wants that kind of passenger.
Not really.
Which is a dirty, great xenomorph alien.
Mm.
The creature design by Geiger is just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's the key to the whole thing. Absolutely. Is Geiger.
Yeah, I mean, if you can see some of the like the concept art of the way that the creature progresses, the way that his mind works as to how he got to that final creature is just amazing.
Yeah,
like it's scary as fuck.
Yeah.
And in fact, they use some of those designs in like the later films as to how, you know, as the evolution of the beast made its way along, because that was the way the evolution went in the guy's mind.
Friend of Scattershot, Nigel White. He's got a book on H.R. Geiger, just his designs before
oh,
the
really?
Alien. Yeah, and the whole book. When you see this book, which was, you know. The art was done before Alien. It's not just the alien creature. It's backdrops of planets and stuff, and it's all
the ship and everything.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Mm. So the whole film is based on his designs, which is, I'm sure he was on board as well. I'm sure he was part of the team doing it.
Everything feels organic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That ship feels like a living thing.
It feels lived in and dirty.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the first time in a science fiction film. Well, I say science fiction. In a science fiction film that's not been a clean, brand new ship. This was the first time you saw a dirty, old. The mining ship
lived in yeah, because
fucked him, it's all breaking apart and stuff. You got two crew members that are engineers just fixing it all the time. Harry Dean Stoughton and the black fella, I can never remember his name. No. But they're like the fixers of the ship.
Yeah. The janitors
right? yeah
I mean, up until that point you got stuff like Silent Running and stuff, which is, you know, that
everything, and obviously like, 2001
everything's like an Apple store and like it's clean lines and everything works.
That's
and,
right,
you know, it's just like, oh, it's the future, of course it all works, of course it fucking doesn't. If humans are involved, it's going to break down.
See, this is where it takes it to another level. It's like, yeah, they created these brand new things, but this is old now. This is so far in the future. This is just a shitty old ship. This is your, you know, Volkswagen Passat.
your Y-Ridge.
Yeah.
The spaceship.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. That adds another dimension to it. It's a case of, you look at this and you think, well, they haven't just got a space alien gun that they just point it and shoot it and it's dead old because it's the future. That's not the case.
Yeah, they've got fuck all.
They've got nothing.
Got to make a homemade flamethrower.
Exactly. Yeah, they've got, you know, hash together these sorts of things. And the reason I love Alien is that the actual creature itself. No, I'm being attacked by an alien.
It's the mist.
No, for the benefit of the listeners, I'm being attacked by beasts.
Not the smallest thing I've ever seen.
You haven't seen my old bill. No, it's like a moth or something. Moths are the most dangerous animal I don't know. The actual creature is alien to the people in the ship as well.
Yeah.
You haven't got, like, as you have in a lot of horror films, there's always like an old guy goes, oh, well, you know what this is, don't you? It's the concubus. He comes around every 24 years, and, you know, for 24 days, for 24 hours, and then a woman is 24 souls, and he goes away for 24 years again. You don't want to fuck with this guy. It's not that. Everyone's just going, it's an alien, it's a thing, I don't know what it is, and it burst out of his chest and now he's going to kill us and it's on my face.
I mean,
it's fucked up.
The planet they get called to is like, it's LV-246 or something like that. It's the planet they get the distress, and when they get there and you know, go to see what's going on. They find all those eggs, don't they? That's the first thing they see. Yeah. And obviously they see the space...
jockey.
Space jockey. Thank you, Alan. Yeah, they see the space jockey, which to me, I was so intrigued about the space jockey in that film. That when Prometheus came out, I was probably more excited than anyone else because I was done with the Alien films by Alien 3, I think.
Yeah.
So that was when I was thought, like, they've done this enough. So when they said like they're going to make Prometheus about the space jockey, I was like, fuck, I've been wanting to find out about him since that film. And
do you know if they made any... do you know if anyone wrote any sort of like novels? Like, you know, like you got like the Star Trek novel, the Star Wars novels,
yeah.
Sorry, that like filling.
Do you know
gaps
what? I have no idea, but I'm sure if Nigel's listening, Nigel will
know
because he is a proper Alien fan. Brilliant. I mean, he is Alien through and through. So, Nigel, if you are listening, and there were books based on the Space Jockey or Aliens and other stories, just
filled in the gaps. Yeah,
yeah. Let us know for our Scattershot Facebook page, please.
Yes, please do.
And anyone else?
Yeah, anyone else? Have you got any experience of this film? Or you know, I think it's one of those films that people want to discover in different ways. So you know, please do tell us the ways that you found this film, and indeed, you know, Aliens as well, and any other film that you want to. We're always happy to listen.
I mean, when I first watched it, and I was quite young again, that's probably 8 or 9 when I watched Alien, and the face hug a bit obviously it gets on John Hurt. I mean, you're like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, I think the face hugger is the scariest movie monster.
God, I mean, it's just, it's at the time you're like, that's horrible because you know something's down its throat. That's the thing, and they can't. They try and cut it, and it's got an acid of blood. And they follow the acid all the way down the ship's holes, and it goes through like 6 holes of the ship.
Do the facehuggers have the alien?
Yeah. Don't remember. They try and get it off his face, and as it goes through the floor.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And you think, oh, I wonder what, and you don't know what it's doing. You really don't. The first time you visit that film, you're like, what the fuck's going on? You think, you know, and it's feeding it and keeping him alive. And then when that scene happens, the chest burst scene. At the dinner table, which none of the crew knew, by the way, when it was filmed. They never knew that effect was going to happen.
Love it.
So when you watch Alien and revisit it, I mean, because I'm sure everyone's seen it.
Yeah.
But when you revisit that film, look at the expressions on their faces when they get splattered with blood, because there's a look of complete revulsion and shock on their faces because they weren't expecting it at all.
That's beautiful. It is just the best. I love that story.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's just imagine, and the funny thing is, they knew something was going to happen because the crew all had umbrellas. So they knew something was going to happen, but not quite what.
It's just a phenomenal scene. I mean, the face hugger in itself is an iconic design.
Yeah.
In a moment that you see, it's like a weird like vagina cat.
Yeah, that's what. Do you know what it is? It's almost like a male rape. That's what it is. It's
in
like male rape
in
the face. They have fucked him in the face.
Yeah, with a vagina cat.
I mean, it's probably for men. It's a lot worse. Maybe that it is a man. I don't know. It's just horrible. The invasion of you.
Yeah,
like that
in the face.
In the face.
In the mouth as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's something that's if it's a creature, you know, and you can think of any other horror film that you want. If it's just or one of just off to be head, it's just a creature that sort of impales you in some way.
Yeah.
Then it's just like insta death or like it got me sort of thing. But with that, it, you know, because it's in an orifice already, it leaves you whole.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's functioning of it. He's like, bit of a tummy ache.
It could be heartburn. Well, the Xanta ain't going to cure that, mate.
No. They Xanta, a bit expensive, and they take a while to kick in. Yeah. If only had Xanta, it'd be a different film entirely. And it's so unsettling that, you know, once you've had this like, base violation of yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's a violation.
Yeah, that, you know, and it goes and it gets off and it scuttles away.
Yeah,
and then you're like, oh, and you wander around and go, man, hey man, are you okay?
Yeah,
and he's just like, don't know. And then he's there eating his shit, and you know,
and it comes out, and it's almost comical.
Yeah,
but in a horrific way. You're like, that's funny, but actually, that's not funny. It's horrible.
Yeah,
and it scutters off, and it just runs off.
You're almost laughing.
He grins at him. He's just gutted. You've got to deal with me.
Yeah, clean that up, and then come find me. Yeah, I mean, brilliant. pastiche of that in Spaceballs.
Yeah, that's fantastic. He does the little song and dance.
And he's John Hurt as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
Just for no reason. Hello, my lovely. Hello, my darling. Hello, my good time girl.
Yeah, fantastic.
Oh, I love Spaceballs.
But yeah, and also, I mean, the one good thing Ridley Scott does with this film is he made the main protagonist in the film a woman. A leading woman, which had never been done in a massive Hollywood film like that. That was a gamble.
Yeah,
that was a big gamble.
And, I'd be interested in knowing if there was some pushback from the studio from that.
It may have been. It was Fox, weren't it, who done Alien? Yeah. But Sigourney Weaver is superb,
stunning,
and Tom Skerritt as well as Dallas was great. They're all great. You know, it's such a good cast.
Yeah,
such a good cast.
It's a proper ensemble cast.
Yeah,
but it's one of those ensemble casts that I don't think was at the time.
Yeah,
like, you know, now you see it and you go, oh, it's Tom Skerritt.
True. That film made a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, arguably more so than Aliens.
Yeah.
Because now you probably look at it and you say, oh, there's Sigourney Weaver, there's Michael Biehn, you know, what's his name?
Oh, it's
Frodo. Not Frodo. Bilbo. Dildo.
Oh, of course, Ian Holm.
Ian Holm, thank you.
No, Ian Holm's in the first one.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was talking about Aliens then.
No, but I am as well.
I think
in that one, you're like, you look at that, and apart from those three, and you got what's his name, the robot as well.
Oh, Lance Henriksen,
yeah.
Oh, it's Bishop.
Yeah, Bishop. Thank you. Fucking hell, I can't think of that.
That's alright. I went and saw the Alien quadrilogy at the Prince Charles Theatre back 4 months ago now, and it started with Prometheus, then Alien, then Aliens, then Alien 3, and then Alien Resurrection.
I imagine it was fairly empty by that time.
Well, we managed to... I was with someone who wasn't particularly a fan, who just wanted to go and see Prometheus. So I managed to keep him now to Aliens, and he fell asleep during Aliens. So we watched 3 whole films, and it started at 8 o'clock at night. So it was a good...
Wow.
Yeah, it was a good 3 o'clock in the morning when we left. I mean, this was still going on until 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But we'd done 3 of them, and the best thing about it was the original Alien film was the original X-rated print.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is so crackled and fucked. My mate hated it. You've gone from Prometheus, which is like one of the most beautiful films ever shot.
Yeah, absolutely.
To this really scratchy, bits almost missing from the original cut. I was so excited. I was like, I can't believe I'm watching the X-rated version, the actual original version that first came out on the big screen. And it was stunning. But then you go from that to Aliens and you realise... Aliens is a much better film, but in a different way, like you said.
Yeah, they are two completely different
films. So different. The only thing in them that's the same is the alien. I know it sounds stupid, but that is the only thing that connects those two films, apart from Sigourney Weaver. But what I'm saying is they are two completely different films and in two different genres, like you were saying.
It's a fantastic achievement. I mean, and obviously everyone knows this, but the second one was directed by Jim Cameron.
Yeah.
And it's just... Get back to Alien. It feels so dangerous when you watch the film. It was one of the first films I ever saw that I thought, like, I don't know who's gonna live through this.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because obviously she wasn't meant. Well, because like there wasn't a leading lady who's been in the film. Like, she wasn't meant to be the Tom Skerritt. Really, is possibly meant to be the hero.
Well, the film follows him more than it follows her.
Yeah.
If obviously you've seen it recently, but you know, if anyone is listening and you watch it, it follows him more than it follows her. You know,
and when he dies, you're like,
what happens?
What the fuck? Yeah, like, and they got that wicked makeshift locator.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah.
Oof.
And he goes up that tunnel, and they're going. It's like 2 meters. 1 meter, and you're thinking, that's metric, surely it's yards. No. you're thinking, fuck, like, that's the first time you'd seen anything like that. It's
Alien,
so tense.
Royale with Alien with cheese.
It's like really shocking.
Yeah.
And Harry Dean Stanton's death as well is really shocking when he's looking for the cat. There's everyone who dies in it, you're like, oh, fuck.
Poor Jonesy.
Poor Jonesy. God, well remembered, Al.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
It's the danger element of it is... It's something that many horror films don't get right. And, you know, it's something that a lot of films in general don't get right.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can count the number of classic films, or rather the number of classic films that get danger right, the feeling of danger right, are the films that stick in the memory, stick in the mind. I mean, you think of something like Die Hard, for instance.
Yeah.
There is a real tangible threat to John McClane there. I mean, he gets fucked up in that.
Yeah.
Like, Richard Die Hard, he gets messed up.
Yeah.
And you think, like, every time he comes up against an opponent, you think, there's a chance he's not going to get through this.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You know, he might not get out of this. And the danger is what brings the horror in that. As much as the terrible the creature's done, I mean, terrible in the best possible way.
Yeah.
It is just a nightmare vision. Yeah, of a weird thing.
I mean, and he's got, you can't even think about the thought process going on in his head because it's just a killing machine. That's all he wants to do is just kill everything. So you've got you can't relate to it at all. It's so alien and so evil that. And the characterisation of the characters in it is so good. They're such good characters, you don't want them to die.
No,
so therefore, that's where the fear comes, is the fact you want these people to live. I mean, I've seen so many slasher films with these shitty little teenagers where you just think, fucking hell, Jason, just kill them. Just kill them all. You know, Michael Myers, just slaughter them. Just stab them. And you don't in this. You really want this alien dead. And that is the key.
You're almost disappointed at the... You are disappointed at the end when, you know, there's such a finite number of survivors. You know, because everyone has a favourite. I mean, my favourite when I first saw the film was Harry Dean Stanton. I wanted him
to... Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And, you know, he's a great actor and, he's one of the few that I did recognise. And I was just like, oh, Christ, oh, no.
Yeah, can't believe he died.
Right, so who's left? And you do like a mental inventory of people and they go, right, okay, so you've got Sigourney Weaver, you know, and you got that and you got the cat and you got all these people and it's like, oh Christ, who's next? And because there's only I think this is the paramount difference between one and between Alien and Aliens, is that because you've only got one alien in the first one, that it is like your Michael Myers, your Freddy Krueger sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's one thing, it's the classic movie monster versus people.
Yeah.
When you've got more than one in there, it becomes like a turkey shoot. And they instantly become a bit more easy to kill because of the very nature that there's more than one of them.
Yeah.
But when there's just one of them, and he's, you know...
And they're not prepared for it. I mean, don't forget, it's military, it's the Marines who go to that planet in the second one. This one...
Good point.
These are just workers. These are miners.
Just people. Yeah.
Completely unprepared for that.
That is where the horror comes from. It's dark as well. You know, as much as, you know, we spoke about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the last show, and we spoke about how that, you know, a lot of the horror comes from what you don't see.
Yeah.
In Alien, you don't see it up until the point that you do see it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this very beautiful delay in, like, you might see a flurry of action. You'll see, you know, like when I can't remember who it is who's in the tunnel, and you know you see like and you see like a flurry of movement, and you see like a bit of tail, and you know a little bit of gore, and you think, oh, that's it, and then it cuts to the other character, and, you know, they're talking to the microphone, you're like, hey, what's going on, and then it cuts just a static camera of them just fucked up and eviscerated in a tunnel with like the alien scurrying away.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh. So you get the gory payoff, you get the gag at the end of it, but you know you don't see what happens. In some ways, I mean, that's worse.
And also you get to see that wicked double mouth.
Yeah. Oh.
That just punches holes in skulls. Yeah. I mean, that, and that's what he does, Harry Dean Stanton. You see it, you see his mouth open and you think, oh fuck, he's gonna bite him, but no, another little mouth comes out to punch his skull, and you're like, oh Jesus, I wasn't expecting that.
Where did that come from? It's good that you've got these two iconic movie creatures in one film. You've got the facehugger, and you've got the xenomorph itself.
Yeah,
and it's difficult to think of any film that's got that sort of double, you know, that 1-2 punch of like, we ain't just got one fucked up monster, we've got two, and we haven't got just two, we've got the two best.
Yeah. And like, which one's more dangerous? They're both just evil, aren't they?
Yuck, it's horrid. It's just horrid. That, and you know, for a horror film, being horrid is everything.
Yeah, that's
it's absolutely everything. So yeah, Alien is right up there for me. There's very few people who haven't seen it, and I can't wait for when my kids are like 8. For me to show to them.
I think 8's a good age for Alien.
It's just
before Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Then I'll show him Old Boy.
Fuck.
I'll show my 8-year-old daughter Old Boy.
I wouldn't even show my dad Old Boy.
I watched Old Boy with my dad.
Do you know what? I actually showed it to my dad. He hated me. What the fuck was that? As soon as he ate a live octopus, my dad, why didn't you just leave it alone?
He did. my dad loved Old Boy.
Oh, my dad hated it.
Yeah, I mean, to the point when he was watching it, because I'd seen it, and then I went down and said, "You've got to watch this." And I sat there and watched it again with him, and
I could imagine your dad loving it.
Got to the point where he said, and I looked at him and I said, actually did that.
The hammer scene.
No.
Oh, the octopus.
I said it. He actually did that.
Yeah.
And it was just went, yeah.
Do you know what? When I watched it with my dad, he turned to me and went, he's actually doing that.
Mm.
And I went, yeah. And that's when he hated me for showing him it. Because he loved, you know, his love of animals.
Yeah,
that's
when completely.
That's when he hated me for showing. I was just giggling in the corner. Well, you came to Texas to take a basket when I was five. Fuck you. Don't ever moan at me.
Payback's a bitch, man. Yeah. Fist bump. High five. Take off your shirt and run out of the room. Alien. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. That, you know, I think we've spoken enough about, you know, my love for that. Please do, everybody, mention, put in the comments on the Facebook page why you love this film, if indeed you do, or if you think that I'm mad for not including Aliens, because it is arguably a better film. And if anybody wants to mention Alien 3 or Resurrection, please do unfollow us.
Yeah.
Come down the Royston Arms and I'll slap you in the face. So yeah, Alien.
Okay, the next one on my list is Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
What a film.
Ridiculous.
Directed by Sam Raimi, was made for about £3.
Yep.
I think in 1987. Well, actually, Evil Dead was made for about £3. This was made for about £6.
Yeah.
This was the...
Double budget.
Yeah,
double budget, double the fun.
It was made in 1987, and the reason I've chosen to have Evil Dead 1 is because Evil Dead 1 has just got the worst effects I've ever seen in a film. The plasticine stop motion stuff, it completely ruins it, and it's a lot more serious. But Evil Dead 2 is a proper horror comedy. Now, like I said before, I like more horror with a little bit of comedy, and this has got proper comedy, and also it's got Bruce Campbell playing Ash. You don't need to say any more than that, really.
As iconic a performance as you're ever going
to
get.
It is stunning, and it's about four friends who go to a cabin retreat for a weekend of smoking and sex and just, you know, doing what teenagers do. But when they're there, one of them in the cellar, not in the cellar, I think it's in the cellar, I can't remember, they find the Book of the Dead, the Necronomicon Ex Mortis.
Yes.
And he reads from it, even though it says don't read from this book, and he reads from it, and all hell is raised from the dead, basically.
Yeah.
And from there, it's just a wild ride of just mayhem.
Mayhem, gore, fun.
Yeah. You've got trees raping women. You've got Bruce Campbell getting his hand possessed by the thing.
Yep.
Which is a great, great scene.
Yeah.
Attacking him.
It's as funny as anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's massively like influenced by stuff like Dr. Strangelove, I think. When you see when you see the hand sort of.
Yeah. Mm.
Even to the way where he clamps it down, can't control it, you know, it's a very physical performance. It's it's all Campbell.
Oh, it's the whole film is just Campbell. I mean, I won't even mention the other acts in it. Not that they're bad or anything, but it's just him. It's all about him. His girlfriend gets killed pretty early on, and he buries her. He chops her head off with a spade, buries her in the front garden of this cabin, and she comes back from the dead as a zombie. But it's about this sort of massive force within the forest trying to get them, and the camera work involved is just genius.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, it was you see this thing chasing them through the forest, this force, this great big evil entity that you do see it at the end, but you don't see it till the very end.
Yeah.
But it chases them through the forest, and how it chases them was from a piece of wood. They had a piece of wood about 4 foot long with the camera tied to it on one person either end of the wood running with it. That's how they got
quality.
The shot, which is unreal, and they've used it in films ever since. They've not stopped using that, which is stunning.
It's sort of like a proto version of a Steadicam, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Just a really cheap version of it.
Yeah,
and it worked. That's what's so good about it. It's so cheap, so nasty, but it is really nasty. It is a nasty film. I mean, he gets possessed as well, so every now and again he'll turn into a deadite, and then he'll go mad, and then he'll sort of drown himself and then come back to life as Ash again. Like I said, he the hand thing's funny when his hand gets possessed, but then it's not quite funny when he has to actually chop his hand off with an axe, which is just fucking horrible, really. You think, Jesus Christ. So he puts this chainsaw, he builds this contraption to fit a chainsaw in his hand. Groovy, baby.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant. It's just a great film.
Yeah.
I remember watching this, not for the first time, I think, but I remember watching it with Neil, Ross and Grant, my next door neighbours, when I was a kid growing up around Nen's house. We all sat there. I was about 12. Brother was about 9. We sat there in a blanket, all four of us, watching this fucking really disturbing comedy horror. And we all loved it. I mean, it was just... It's just a great film, and Sam Raimi's a genius for doing it. I mean, he put his heart and soul into that film. He bled for that film.
Yeah, completely.
And it's just Raimi for him and Campbell. And he done it for about a quid.
Yeah.
Bruce Campbell, I think he got a quid.
Well, it's funny that you say about the, you know, the sort of ad hoc Steadicam thing. Necessity is mother of invention.
Yeah.
And because they handed, like, fuck all money, and it was just passion for doing it, excuse me. I mean, am I right in thinking, because I haven't seen it one or two for a while.
Yeah.
Isn't two more or less a remake of
one? What happened was number one got banned.
Right.
It got banned. I don't know how it got banned, but it was banned. So he was like, well, I'll do it again. I'll do it better, and I'll make sure it doesn't get banned this time. But what he actually done was, because he added the comedy into it, which was missing in the first one, you get away with a lot more having comedy in. So what he actually done was make a much more disturbing film, and he got away with it. It got passed. So that was, it was a video nasty, but that was the only one that wasn't banned, which was great. I think they took him. I think they tried to take him to court over it. I think they tried to sue him.
I think there was issues around the rape scene.
Yeah,
I think there was a little bit of an issue around that.
Yeah,
but I think it still passed the censors.
Yeah,
in most places, just because it was a tree.
Yeah,
rather than a person. And, you know, it was, I don't know, I'm sure they had an argument for it, and I'm not going to try and stipulate what it was. But yeah, it is a funny film.
Really,
and
funny.
You can really see the influence, you know, he's sort of the Three Stooges influence.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
It's very slapstick.
Yeah.
And whilst you've still got a few, like, shoddy effects, the effects are generally pretty damn good.
No, they hold up, well. They definitely hold really up. Good. And you've got that horrible witch in the cellar.
Oh, it's grim.
Which is just, and, you know, all the way through, she'll pop her head up. She's going, you're going to die, and dead by dawn. And it's just like, and she's really evil.
She's Chinese. Dead by dawn! Bruce Campbell! Mr. Bruce, you'll be dead by dawn, I tell you! Yeah.
And, it's disturbing and funny, and that's what I want in a film.
Yeah, completely.
That's, in a horror, that's exactly what I want.
Yeah, it is a fantastic
And movie. Also the ending.
Oh!
It has a fantastic ending to it, which screams out for a threequel.
Yeah.
If that's what you call it. And they did. And they delivered with Army of Darkness.
I love Army of Darkness.
That's fantastic.
He's hilarious.
Again, on Netflix. Evil Dead 2's not on Netflix, but Army of Darkness is.
Yeah.
But that's a great film. And it completely continues on from that and takes in such a different direction.
Do you know, what's the original ending for Army of Darkness? Because there's two endings. Because the copy I have of it has both endings. And what happens is you have an ending, and then you, as soon as it finishes, you get, like, directed by Sam Raimi, and you get some other stuff going. And then straight away, there's the other ending.
Well, if I remember rightly, because I'll be honest, I don't remember very much, but wasn't the ending of the Armadillo, he ends up back in the supermarket?
That's one of them.
Right.
That's one of them.
Kmart or wherever he works.
Yeah. And he's got the
shotgun,
and there's, like, Deadite comes out.
That's
and bounces on a trampoline or something. And he's like, he says his little catchphrase. He's like,
groovy baby.
And he says something else. But the other ending was that he goes into the cave, and he's got the like sleepy juice stuff that he takes. Because obviously he's in, like, the past. And he does it. He goes, and it says, like, you must take, like, three drops. And he goes, like, one, two, like that. And then there's, like,
and he goes back too far.
There's, like, a bear or something comes out, and he distracts him. He goes, oh, okay. And the bear fucks off, and he goes, okay. And he goes, one, two, three, like that. And then he lays down, and he goes, two, and he wakes up, and he gets out of the cave, and it's all exactly the same up to this point. And he gets out of the cave thing. He looks out, and it's just like...
Oh, it's an apocalypse.
Yeah, it's just apocalyptic. Yes. And it's just, like, overgrown.
Yeah, of course it is.
And he's like,
yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And that's the end. That's the better ending.
Yeah,
that's
the, but I don't think that's the main ending. I think the main ending is he ends back in the supermarket.
Absolutely, yeah. But I prefer the proper one.
Yeah, of course.
I prefer the post-book, because it's bleak. You just think, oh, God.
Do you know the most exciting thing? They're doing a number two, Army of Darkness 2.
Really?
Yeah, with Bruce Campbell.
Raimi and Campbell?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
That's the plan.
Well, I think that's paid for...
I mean, he's going to need to lose a bit of weight.
That's paid for this podcast in itself. Have you seen Baba Hotep?
Oh, I love that film.
It's great.
The Mummy versus Elvis. Come on. What a film.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, well, it's JFK's an old black
guy. Yeah. Who plays it? I don't know. I'm not even bothered looking up.
But yeah, Evil Dead 2... when it was made in 1987, horror was dead, really. There wasn't any decent horrors being made, but they really scored high with that.
Absolutely. They weren't financing them, as we said before. There just wasn't much around.
It was a student film, basically.
It pretty much was, yeah. It was a passion project.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of the best innovation comes from. So people just wanted to fucking make a decent film.
Yeah. And the remake shit, by the way.
I haven't seen it. The trailer's phenomenal for that. It's really horrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's grim.
I couldn't even watch the trailer.
Really?
I was in the cinema. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, like, it was nasty.
Really horrible.
It was a nasty film.
I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, it misses Ash. If you ain't got Ash in it, or the character even trying to be Ash, then it's just rubbish. And
is it a remake of the first one or the second one?
No, it's a remake of the first one.
Okay.
Really.
Okay.
But it's just nasty. It's nasty and it's got a terrible ending.
Okay.
And it's got a main woman in it, so you know, it's rubbish. It's for a teen market. That's what they've done.
Right. It's got Justin Bieber in it.
I hope not. Probably. I wouldn't even know that he's out. To be honest, if I saw him, I wouldn't know.
Thank God for that.
I'm 35. I'm 36. I wouldn't know.
Really?
I think so.
Did you lose a year? Probably right in front of you.
A few more than him. A few more than that.
Army of Darkness. Evil Dead 2.
Army of Darkness had in my top five, but yeah, Evil Dead 2 is.
It is a great film. And as we said before, like American Werewolf in London, it is very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're the two best comedy horrors, I think.
Shaun of the Dead as well.
No,
they're not as good as those two.
No, I wouldn't class it as a horror. I know it is zombies in it, but I don't even think it's a horror, really. It's more of a comedy.
The problem, and we're going to have a little sidebar here, that the problem with Shaun of the Dead, horror-wise, is that all of the like horrific stuff that happens in it, all of the like the kills and the gags in it, are ripped directly from other films.
Yeah.
Like, the main one, case in point, is when Dylan Moran gets pulled through the window in the pub.
Yeah, the Winchester.
And they pull out his insides. That is shot for shot from Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Shot for shot. Even to what he said, I hope you choke on it, you bastards.
Does he actually say that in it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure he does. Unless I shouted it when I saw it in the cinema. it's shot for shot. So like, you see it, it's like... it is a comedy.
I wouldn't put it in a horror section at all. I really wouldn't.
No.
It's a comedy. Yeah. For me.
It's a gory comedy.
It's a gory comedy, yeah.
And it is funny. It's funny.
Oh, it's funny. Hilarious. I love it. Don't get me wrong. It's great. But I certainly wouldn't be anywhere near
it's
a horror.
It's not as good as Hot Fuzz, though.
I know we're going to I've got to watch it again. I know I'm going to watch it again and I'll come back to you on that one, definitely.
I don't think it will change your opinion. That's my opinion. I still haven't seen it.
Evil Dead 2, it was between this and Ringu. Really, to be in my top five,
okay,
and it was just it's just the originality of it. For that, I know it doesn't sound original now, but at the time, maybe it wasn't original at the time, but they'd done that so well. I mean, look at the films that take the piss out of it now, like The Cabin in the Woods, like your Cabin Fever.
I've still not seen Cabin in the Woods.
Oh my God, Alan, it's Joss Whedon, mate. You've got to get on that. It's stunning.
Okay, brilliant. I'm glad you said that because I know a lot of people have said it's a Marmite film.
No, no. I'll tell you what it is. If you know your horror, it's one of the cleverest films you'll ever see.
Okay, wicked.
If you don't like horror, it's shit.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Okay, fair enough.
And you know your horror.
It's on Netflix as well, so I'm definitely
watching. Mate, if it's on Netflix, mate, it is brilliant. It's funny. And all the references to every other...
Is it funny?
Mate, of course it's funny. It's a comedy. It's a proper horror comedy.
I didn't know that.
It's stunning. And you'll look at it and you go, that is so clever how they've pastiched all these horror films. And it's just genius. It really is clever.
Cool.
And it's got Richard Jenkins in.
Oi!
There you go.
Nothing can be bad with Richard Jenkins in. Cool. So, Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
A classic.
Yes.
Please do watch it.
Yes.
And let us know what you think. I don't know anything about you, baby, but you're everything I'm dreaming of. I don't last and best
horror
film
definitely
for us is John Carpenter's The Thing. Well, John Carpenter's The Thing, Colin.
Oh, where to start? Okay, where to start with a synopsis of the film? It's about a group of researchers in the Antarctic outpost. And one day, as they're researching or doing whatever, a helicopter flies above them from a Norwegian outpost a few miles down the road, and they're shooting at a dog. Anyway, so in trying to shoot this dog, they blow themselves up, and they end up killing one of these Norwegians, because he's trying to kill the dog, and in the process he shoots one of the fellas in the legs, one of the Americans in the leg. Anyway, so that's it. That's the story there. Good night.
That's enough for episode.
So they house the dog.
Yeah.
And the reason that these Norwegians have been chasing this dog to kill it is because this dog is an alien life form. And what it does, it assimilates and takes over the body of a host.
Yes.
So what you end up with is a fantastic story of these, I think it's seven or eight fellas. And that's the beauty of the film, is it's just all men.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to sound sexist or anything, but it's very rare to get a film about just men.
Well, you watch a lot of films that are just about men.
That came out so wrong.
Most people who watch films just about men come out pretty wrong.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I know what you're trying to get.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? There's no cheese in there. There's no cheese in this film at all.
No.
There's no sort of love story. There's nothing. It's about seven men trying to survive.
Yeah.
I think it's more than seven. I keep saying seven. It's probably more than that.
Yeah.
It's a group of fellas. And
it's a group of fellas across various ages and race and colours and creeds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter about all of that. It's just the fact that they're blokes in a situation doing their job. Much in the same way that when we spoke about aliens, it's just, you know, it's people doing a job who have a situation that's happening around them. This is, you know, it's almost exactly the same in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, you've got these guys
that
you know, but these aren't like roughneck blue collar workers. They're researchers. You know.
There's
intelligence there in this desolate frozen wasteland. And you know, there's a tangible sense of testosterone in there.
Oh god, that's the key to the film, the testosterone level. That is the key. There's 12 of them, by the way. So I've just looked at an IMDb. There's 12 to start with.
Fair enough. Okay.
It was made in 1982, and it's John Carpenter's best film by an absolute mile. Now, John Carpenter is a great director at ensemble fellas.
Yeah.
Films.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah.
Films like that. I mean, you forget how good that film is. Yeah. I mean, that's just all fellas as well.
I'd argue that the remake's really good as well.
Oh, the remake is really good.
Yeah.
It is really good. He's done a great job.
Ethan Hawke, really good.
Yeah, going Ethan Hawke. But
and Morpheus.
Yeah.
I don't know his name, right? Never going to learn it.
Lawrence Fishburne.
No, that's not his name. His name is Morpheus.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so this alien is in this dog, and it's assimilated the likeness of a dog, but it is this alien being. And what it does is it gets put in with the other dogs, because it's still like huskies, aren't they?
They've
all got huskies in the Antarctic.
I love huskies.
Yeah, they're lovely looking things.
Yeah.
And it assimilates, and that's a horrible scene for my dad. One of the most upsetting scenes he's ever seen, a load of dogs being absolutely mullet. And when the alien shows itself to be what it is...
Do you think it ever shows itself?
Well, no, this is the best thing about it, right? What it does show is it shows an amalgam of all the other creatures it's ever assimilated on thousands of different planets.
Yeah.
So what you've got, it's not... It doesn't... It shows itself to be any other form it's taken in any other planet it's ever taken things from. So you never get a true definite picture of what it actually is.
Yeah.
What it looks like is a fucking mess.
Yeah.
An absolute mess. Tentacles and you know, it's just an horrific special effect.
Yes. Can I tell you something that I thought about this? Because I had a discussion with someone a few years ago now. I mean, I can't remember who it was or where it was actually. I mean, I was in a party. I remember I was at a party and I was talking about some guy who was, you know, he smokes a bit of weed. Let's be honest. And
Out of order.
How dare he? How very dare he? He was suitably refreshed. And we were talking about, you know, near death experiences and stuff. And he told me his theory on near death experiences. When you know you hear people and say, "Oh, you know, this thing is coming to my life flashed before my eyes," all this sort of stuff. Like, and his theory on this was that your life flashing before your eyes is your body, because your brain remembers everything. You know, there's that famous saying that, you know, you only use 20% of your brain, and you get these savants, as you know, as I'm sure regular listeners to the conversation would know, where me and Tom spoke about savants such as Kim Peek and these people who use their brains in different ways, who can remember these just remarkable amounts of data. But your brain is capable of that. The human brain is capable of these things. It's just that as regular human beings, we're not cognitive enough to connect those parts of the brain to remember these things on a conscious level.
Yeah.
Now, because, you know, this guy believed that your brain remembers everything.
Right.
You know, it's a constant recording memory of stuff. So yeah, when you have this near-death experience, it's your brain running through everything that you've remembered, that you've ever gone through, to find a relative sequence of events to get you out of that scenario.
Right.
So, for instance, okay, if you're drowning, and, you know, your brain, your brain goes through everything you've ever happened to say, oh, no, grab that plank. Grab the plank, because that will, you know, you'll keep you afloat. Or if you're, you know, I don't know, whatever's happening, if you're in peril in any way, there's a shark there, you know, I remember, I got punched in the nose, boom.
Like, yeah.
That's your life flashing before your eyes, so that you are going through everything you've ever experienced to get to that point that will give you that self-sufficient aspect of, this is what I need to do to survive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I absolutely believe that to be the truth.
Okay.
That is the I think the life flashing before your eyes thing is a complete truth. I think that happens. I think there's no reason that, from a purely chemical standpoint, that shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah.
Now, I think when I see the thing, especially when you've got the scene with the dogs, and this is at the start, it's no spoilers.
Yeah.
Actually, what am I talking about? Spoilers?
We're going to spoil it.
Everyone's spoken about it.
It's the thing.
Where they've got the flamethrower and the flamethrower and the dogs,
yeah,
and you get that,
rah, and it opens up,
and it opens up, and it changes, and as you say, it's through all of those different beings that it's assimilated,
which I never got to start with. I never quite got that till later on. I just thought that was the alien, and I was like, oh no, that's not the alien.
You can see detail, can't you?
You can see the different things that it's assimilated, and that's it's just fucking genius.
And I see that as its near death experience, right, where it's going through, it's got that life flashing before its eyes sort of thing, but on a physical level rather than a metaphysical level.
Yeah,
that's what I see that, and that,
yeah, it's, yeah,
I can't believe that I'm the only person who saw that, and I believe that that is what that is.
Yeah.
And I think that is fucking genius.
It's phenomenal. That
it's,
is
it's brilliant. It's a mental state in physical form.
Yeah.
And for a horror film, that is horrific.
Yeah.
You know, that is horror. To see, life flashing before someone's eyes, but the life is purely physical.
The life of an alien life. Yeah. Yeah.
Because its life is physical. Because it assimilates, as you said, it's the perfect word, assimilates these beings. It takes on the physical likeness of that. And I don't believe it acts as host. It assimilates, it takes the essence.
Now, it's absolutely spot on. That is absolutely spot on. If you've seen The Thing and you didn't get that, go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
Go back and watch it again and see that we're right. We are right in that. It does. It's not just one alien. It is going through all its different phases of alien life. Everything.
Yeah.
And that's stunning. It's just, it's incredible. I mean, there's scenes when Wilfred Bramble has a heart attack. I think someone has a heart attack.
Yeah.
And they sort of get a defibrillator and sort of push on his chest. And all of a sudden his chest caves in. The chest caves in.
It's grim.
And then these massive jaws, claws, just cut the guy's arms off who's defibrillating because they've gone so far into his body. And you think, fuck. I mean, and then that, again, they start burning that. And to try and get away, it's sort of melts itself off into like a spider from some other world. The head turns into a spider. These legs come out of the head and crawl away.
It's horrible. It is the most horrible film.
I mean, you're talking a film made in 1982 where the effects are still the best for that. They are incredible, the effects. They stand up today by a mile. And
have you ever seen it? Sorry to interrupt, but have you ever seen any kind of documentary about how this film was made?
No. Do you know what? Apparently, if you get I've got the Blu-ray of the thing, but on there's a commentary track between John Carpenter and Kurt Russell, which is apparently the funniest and best commentary over. So you watch the film and they talk about the film. Apparently, it's brilliant. They reckon it's the best one out there.
Yeah,
I'd love to watch that.
I'd love to see a documentary on the effects, though. I'd love to see like the action, like how things were done. I don't think I've ever spoken about this actually, but there's two fantastic making of documentaries.
Okay, can I guess one?
Go on then.
The Abyss.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the making of The Abyss is better than the film Abyss.
Yes, absolutely agree.
And the other one is Full Tilt Boogie, which is Dusk Till Dawn.
Incredible.
If anyone listening to this ever makes a film, we will make the documentary film that you made in the film. I mean, arguably, you've got the Don Quixote film documentary.
Oh, yeah, The Man from La Mancha.
Man from La Mancha, thank you.
That's sad.
But it's sad because they don't actually make the film. It's terribly sad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Full Tilt Boogie is fantastic. It's hilarious.
It's
a comedy film in itself. And it, as much as the machinations of making a feature film are fully featured in that, it's still, I don't know, there's something about it that's, you know...
very knowing in what it's doing.
Yeah, it is, and it there's a lot of playing up to the camera. But the one for The Abyss, well, I forget what it's called. I think it's just
There is a name to it now. I can't remember what it is now.
But the making of The Abyss,
it is better than the film by a mile,
and it is
incredible,
fantastic.
Seeing Ed Harris lose his temper about being put underwater and all that.
Well, yeah, because he nearly drowns. Yeah, because he nearly died. I think that's a fair point.
I mean, they all lose it on that.
Yeah, it's fucked up, but. I would love to see.
There isn't. I know there isn't actually a documentary on the thing. It's just commentary.
Okay.
I'm
definitely going to listen to that because I've got the blue of this.
I mean, one of the good things about the film is their realization of how fucked they are. I think it is Wilfred Bramble who's on that terrible old computer with the green writing.
The classic John Carpenter game.
And he's asking. It's like a supercomputer in them days, and he's asking it the probability. Do you remember the actual graphics of the DNA melding? Do you not remember it?
I don't remember.
See their blood DNA in green blocks, and this host that is consuming their green blocks, and he's looking at it, and he types to the computer, the chances of survival. And it's like about 4%, and he's like, right, we're fucked. And he goes sort of crazy. And it's the realisation that they're all fucked.
Mm.
And not only are they all fucked, that some of them are already an alien.
Yeah.
And they don't even know it. And that's one of the best things about it is the trust issue. No one can trust anyone there.
No.
No one. I mean, even the main character, Kurt Russell, by the way, who's never been better, who is an absolute mainstay in John Carpenter films.
He's like
John Carpenter's muse, isn't he?
Yeah, completely.
I mean, he's never been better. I mean, as MacReady, he's just absolutely iconic as the helicopter driver. I mean, it's a great scene when they actually think, this is fucked, but we need to find out what those Norwegians were doing. So they fly to the Norwegian base and they find the carnage at the Norwegian base. They find the great big hole in the floor.
Yeah.
Where they got the ice thing. Well, the spaceship was.
Yeah, a spine tingling.
Yeah, and that is a great... It looks really good. I mean, the special effects on that, it looks vast.
Well, that's a beautiful matte painting, isn't it?
Could you imagine that painted and hung on your wall, just that picture of MacReady just overlooking
the scene. I imagine John Carpenter's got that on his wall.
Oh, I bet he has.
If he hasn't, someone has.
Yeah.
And when I win the lottery, that is mine all day long.
But then you see like the horrors, they go around, they see the videos of them finding the spaceship and then digging this alien out of the ice. And then you see the bloke who's cut his own throat. And the blood's all frozen. You think this isn't going to end well. And they all know from that moment when they go to that Norwegian base, MacReady knows that they're all dead, basically.
Yeah.
All of them.
It's a stark contrast to... I say that. It's a different type of horror. In as much as we say about things where the horror is where you don't see things rather than you see it. In this, you see the horror, but the actual true horror is in the tangible paranoia.
Yeah, the paranoia between the people. Unreal.
And that is fully realised in one particular scene.
In the blood test scene.
In the blood test scene.
Yeah.
And I've never, ever seen a scene in a film that captures paranoia and distrust and pure terror. Like, you know, just terror from your immediate surroundings as in any film or anything that's in that scene.
I tell you what, the best thing about that scene is when, like, MacReady's, like, got them all up by a flamethrower. He's holding them all hostage, you know, and he's like, listen, I've got this test. We're doing this test. He literally, there's two other people he trusts, and he, like, ties, like, six people down to this massive couch. And one by one, he's doing this test. And it sort of black, it goes black after about two or three tests, and then it comes back. And there's only like two people left. One's Gary. Gary's an absolute cunt in the film. And he says to him, I know you're one. And he said, Gary, I'm going to do now what I've known all along. And he gets that burning bit of metal that he's done on the flamethrower and puts it into the blood. And it's meant to scream and to jump out. But it doesn't. And Gary just turns, he goes, now, if none of you aren't too busy, can one of you please untie me from this fucking chair? And with that, the bloke next to him goes, and then he starts turning into the alien. You think, fuck, it weren't Gary all along. It's the bloke you think's normal.
Yeah.
And it's just, that scene is incredible.
It's heart in the mouth. I must have seen it. I must have seen it 20 times.
Yeah.
And it doesn't fail to get, even if you watch it out of context, even if you haven't seen the film for years and you just put the scene, the beauty of it is as well, and you know that everyone knows it's iconic, is that that entire scene is a complete chapter on a DVD. From the moment they came on DVD to the moment it came on Blu-ray, is its own chapter.
Really?
And if you follow DVD and Blu-ray production, especially when they have different cuts, they always fuck around with the chapters and stuff. So they're different lengths, different wide, you know, different timings and stuff. You know, they fuck around with how things are interspersed in case you know pick out particular scenes. That is always left alone. It is effectively one entire. It's almost as if it's one camera shot. So you've got the moment they go in the room to the moment that they leave the room.
Yeah.
And for every version of that film I've seen, it is always one chapter. Never cut, one chapter. It is phenomenal. It is a play.
That could be
a like a 9-minute play on its own.
Yeah, it's a stunning scene. The whole film's stunning, but that encapsulates the whole film.
It does. Absolutely does.
The paranoia and the untrustworthiness going on between them all.
Yeah.
And it's got a wicked payoff at the end. Yeah. I love the ending.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like we were saying, that sort of that ambiguous ending where there's not a happy ending, and you just don't know what's going to happen.
No.
You just don't, you know, and it's left so grim. You're like, fuck, it's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's like The Mist almost. It's like,
yeah, totally.
But fuck,
it's a great comparison, Cole. That really is.
It is. It's that. It's got that about it. You're like, fuck, I love that ending, but there's no resolution almost. But it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. It's just the best. I mean, the horror top five was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do.
Yeah,
I mean, if I had ear, I wouldn't have any ear now because I would have pulled it all out because that has torn me to shreds. I mean, the comic book one was pretty difficult, but that was dreadful. But the thing that I mean that if when we ever do the top five films of all time, right?
Yeah, we'll leave that for a while.
Yeah, we won't do that for a while. We'll go back to reviewing stuff, I think, because this is twisting my melon, man.
We're playing too many games to get to that point.
But the thing would definitely be a candidate for that. What is that?
I'm just trying to use the force to pick up my e-cigarette that I've dropped to the floor. But I've got another one, so it's fine.
Yeah, the thing would be close to that. I mean, that's how highly I rate this film.
Brilliant. I mean, in my top films of all time, I mean, it doesn't really feature.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, not to say that it's not, I mean, it's not an amazing, absolutely iconic, fantastic film, because it is. It's everything that you want it to be. But, I mean, horror's very much your...
Yeah, this is the thing, it's me, it's what I'm all about.
But I love it top to bottom. There's not a single shot in this film that I do not like.
No,
not I do even not
the
love.
Score. Do you remember the dirty, horrible, depressing score? It's just everything about it is grim.
Yeah,
but in a brilliant way.
The ending is the perfect payoff for it.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. It's as much a The ending is as much a character as the characters in.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
And it's a fuck you as well.
Yeah, completely.
It's a proper fuck you.
It's one of those films where I think there's no way it could have ended other than that.
No.
No.
Yeah, when you get to the end and you see that and you go, well, yeah, that's the ending. That's how it should be. It's not like, oh, they should have done this or they should have done that. No. They've done it.
Yeah. No one had any... Yeah, there's no other way it could have finished.
Yeah.
I love it top to bottom.
Yeah,
it absolutely.
It's incredible. It's the pinnacle of John Carpenter. I mean, he done Escape from New York and he done the Assault and Precinct 13, but this was his best.
It absolutely, and I think we as Scattershot fully condone this as the best horror film ever made.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a 10.5.
It's a fully blown 10.5.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to argue that. So, yeah, fantastic. Best horror film ever made. Coming up next, our also-rans.
Boss.
Okay, so what we're going to do is now we're going to talk about some of our also-rans, as we've discussed. Colin is the man as far as this is concerned.
Okay, in true Scattershot style, I'm gonna
just splat them out.
I'm gonna splat them out.
Can I do a little retort as soon as I'm gonna do like one or two words?
Yeah. Okay. I'll go. I'll tell you what I'll do first. I'll go for the ones that nearly got in.
Okay, do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Martyrs.
Okay.
American Nightmare on Elm Street. Hellraiser, The Devil's Backbone, and Kronos.
Devil's Backbone and Kronos, love.
Right, they were, yeah, I mean,
Kronos is amazing. Did I introduce you to Kronos?
Yes, you did.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes, you did.
I thought I did, yeah. I love Kronos. It is a sensation.
I mean, that bit, whenever I think of Kronos, I always think of him licking that blood off that white tiled floor in the bathroom, in the toilet.
That is the definition of hunger, really. It gets hunger more than anything.
It's just grim, but it's so precise and so clean, and it's a pristine white bar. Anyway, for anyone who doesn't know, Kronos is a story about a little metal device.
It's almost like a brooch.
Yeah, like a brooch. But when it's you know, from time before,
time immemorial.
Yeah, and it's like a beetle in it that lives off blood. Now,
when
you put this device onto your wrist, almost, it starts sucking your blood, but it makes you strong and powerful, almost like a vampire. But in return for this power, you need to feed the beetle within this brooch, and what it feeds on is blood. So therefore, you become like a vampire.
Mm.
I don't want to keep going on and on about it, but it's stunning, isn't it?
Yeah. How close was it to getting?
Oh, it was close. Life? It was really close. It was between that and that Nightmare on Elm Street and Ringo were three films that were really close.
Mm.
Okay, I'm gonna shit these out.
Can I talk about vampire films in
particular?
I was thinking a lot about vampire films.
Yeah.
And there's a thing about vampire films. And I was thinking about why they're so popular. And my theory on this is because vampires are terrible. Like...
Well, the creatures are terrible.
The creatures themselves are terrible. Right. I mean, you know, you've got your Dracula.
Yeah.
Which is, the archetypical blood-sucking creature. That's a very definite thing. And there's been lots of iterations of vampires and Draculas. I know that's a misnomer in itself. And I'm going to say now, the best type of vampire / Draculas is in the Necroscope books by Brian Lumley, which is just
Oh, it's incredible.
It's incredible. We're not going to talk about it now, because I think that's something we need to talk about.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
In length, in another podcast. But my theory with why people like vampires so much, and this is kind of, you know that sort of tween thing that people like now with, you know, the Twilights and I think His Mortal Remains, I think that's a thing. I don't know whether that's got vampires in it, I don't know.
Okay. What's that, a new thing?
I think it's I think it's like a tween book that's been turned into a film.
Do you think they've been desensitized vampires? Do you think they've
a little bit, way? A little bit, but my theory behind it is that it's because vampires are, you know, essentially, you know, you've got the human form and you've got all that stuff, but it makes people feel better about being human. Because, you know, you've got these... no one wants to be a vampire. Who wants to be a vampire? Because they're rank.
I don't know. What's the interview with a vampire? I wouldn't mind all that Lestat shit. I'd be up for that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because the whole...
But then again, you say Blade 2 vampires. I don't want to be one of them.
No, they're fucked up. That's shit.
Yeah.
But it's the point of like being drinking blood and, you know... I mean, the immortal thing, people... You can take or leave that. But some people might find that quite attractive. But I just think it's the kind, you know, that living in squalor, but, you know, drinking blood and being dead.
I think it depends on what sort of vampire is portrayed. Because, I mean, like you were saying, at Twilight and all that, it's very romanticised at the moment, vampires nowadays. Yeah. Whereas you look at I keep referring to Blade 2, but you look at them. And
they're
Kronos.
They're
the worst. And Kronos as well, you would never want to be that guy.
Well, you would never want to be the guy in Kronos, would you? Well,
Jesus.
Kronos and the film The Thirst.
Oh, The Thirst, yeah, with Park Chan-wook in it, is the director of
No. What am I thinking of then? That's not
The Thirst is a Japanese film.
Yes,
about the priest.
I'm thinking of the film with, is it David Bowie in it?
Oh, that's called The Thirst as well.
Yeah.
I think it's called The Thirst with Susan Sarandon as
well.
Yes,
yeah. That's fucked
up. Yeah, that's grim as well.
They're basically heroin addicts.
Yeah.
They portray heroin addicts through the prism of vampirism.
By the way, if you've never seen the Japanese version, you must watch that.
I'm pretty sure I have.
But that's grim as well. You wouldn't want to be one of them.
No. I mean,
it's definitely how it's portrayed.
Yeah. The fact that... regardless of whether they're like romanticised or whether they're the portrayed as animals, the fact is, when you watch that as a human being, you think, I don't want to be one of them, because and they look like you, whereas you don't, like, you see a dirty great scarecrow monster. I keep going back to that. Jeepers Creepers really affected me.
Number two affected you. I don't understand.
I don't even remember number two. You don't want to, you know, that's just bullshit. But if it looks like you, then you know, you've got more of a connection to it, which is why I think The Thing is so effective, because it's the paranoia. So you don't know that person's a vampire. You don't know, blah 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 blah, because they've got a human visage going on. So that's kind of my theory behind vampires. And that's what we were talking. I forgot what we were talking about.
Shitting them out.
Was a Near Dark in your?
Do you know what? I didn't think of that. Yes, that, well, it wouldn't have been near it, but that's a great film.
Yeah, arguably
Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah, arguably it's a bit more action.
It's dated now. It's very dated. I watched it a little while ago. It is dated. I mean, it's all right. Like I said, Hellraiser was close as well. Okay, I'm going to shit these out very quickly, Alan. Because one other thing, The Shining. That would have been in there.
Yeah.
Until I borrowed your Blu-ray, I haven't watched it.
Yeah.
Again, I hadn't seen it for about 3 or 4 years. I watched it, and it wasn't as good as I thought it was.
Even after watching, was it Room 235?
Room 237. Yeah. Even after watching it, that's why I wanted to watch it again.
Your one's too better than mine.
Yeah. That's why I wanted to watch it again. And the one thing I noticed, which I've never noticed before, is Jack Nicholson completely overacts from the very first scene. Completely overacts.
He does.
And I never noticed that.
How good is the Blu-ray though?
Oh, it's stunning.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's
brilliant, Alan. It's
for anyone flawless. Listening, please do get the Kubrick box set that I've got.
I still haven't seen 2001 yet, so don't take it back yet.
Have you seen all the rest of them?
No. Well, that's the one I want. That's the one I want to watch on Blu-ray.
Right, okay.
Anyway, so The Shining, it was going to be in there after that. Nowhere near.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to go through some ones. Reanimator, Don't Look Now, The Exorcist.
We got to where Don't Look Now.
Really? Brilliant. Listen, I'll shit them out. You stop me. That's how we're doing.
Okay, Don't Look Now is great. I mean, as a parent, it's a horror film in a whole different level. I've seen it twice in the last few years. Well, I'd say 5 years. Once before having kids and once after. And the start of it where...
the kid drowns.
Where the kid, basically, the whole story is Donald Sutherland and his wife... Julie Christie?
Julie Christie, well done.
Julie Christie, basically they've got a kid and their kid dies.
It's about them dealing with the whole film's about them dealing with the death of their child. Yeah, they go to Venice to get away from it all. Don't
absolutely,
they?
It's basically it's a diorama of grief, which is just
it's fucking horrific. I don't know how you've watched it twice.
That sentence I just said is terrible.
I don't know how you've seen it twice.
Well, just because it was, I watched it because it was because I wanted to watch it because I haven't seen this for a while, and then it was on after, and I thought I'd like to watch it through the prism of being a parent.
Right.
Because I knew it was about.
Even more affecting then.
It was really, I mean, only the start. The rest of it wasn't really too much. And the ending, I'm not going to
Well, once the ending, once you've seen the ending once, it can't shock you
again. I think the ending's shit.
Really?
Yeah, it does. I don't get it.
Oh, it disturbed me. It definitely disturbed me.
It disturbed me. The first time I saw it, like before the first time I saw it, like 5 years ago, was, you know, I thought, like, that's a bit grim. But
yeah.
It didn't really disturb me. I just thought, like, that's a bit shit. And I still don't get it, Cole.
No, it's but a serial killer, isn't it?
But up to that point, if you don't try and look into it from any kind of angle like that, and you just think, like, it's just two people dealing with grief, it's horrific. Yeah. It's a really terrifying film. It's just, you know, again, paranoia.
Yeah.
And as much as you can have a scary monster, I'm not going to say scarecrow again, as much as you can have a scary monster, like, the worst thing that you can have in a film is the psyche of people trying to react to emotion, because that's what the viewer ultimately feels.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think that's terrible.
I can never watch it again now.
I don't think I will. Although it's got a stunning sex scene in it.
Fair play for watching. Okay, where have I gone? This actually links into Jacob's Ladder, The Wicker Man, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Donald Sutherland, 1978, The Fly, Henry Portrait, Serial Killer, Wolf Creek, Angel Heart, Switchblade Romance.
Angel Heart.
Yes.
That's where Angel Heart.
Okay.
I watched Angel Heart with my dad, as I watched most of my horror films with my dad. I loved it. I saw it more as a thriller the first time I saw it. I saw through the Lewis Cipher
did you?
Thing.
I didn't.
Almost instantly.
Oh, okay. That must have ruined it a little
but
bit.
Not really, because it was almost too obvious.
Yeah.
But I loved the fact that I saw through it, but the character didn't.
Mm.
Like the character.
It's a dark film.
It's a very dark film. It's got that.
I love that New Orleans.
Yeah,
Louisiana. What is it? Mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, gumbo kind of. Yeah. There is a word that you're going for.
That kind of backwards feel to it, and there's sort of sacrifice and voodoo involved and all that kind of stuff.
It was a melting pot of ideologies.
It felt fucking hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really hot, like hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Like hell.
You know what? That is a perfect synopsis. It felt hot. I never
really
thought that.
Really fucking hot. I mean, everyone's sweating for that.
Totally.
Everyone is sweating for that film.
I mean,
it's not till the end, and you've kind of ruined it by saying about Louis Cipher. Not ruined it, but you know, you've kind of said about Louis Cipher, but that's where the hot, that's where the heat comes
from.
Yeah,
totally.
Because
that's
where he's going.
Yeah.
He's in purgatory. That is where he's going.
I'm going to say this now. I don't think Mickey Rourke's been better than that.
I completely agree.
I don't think he's ever been better than that.
Completely agree.
It is one of the single best protagonist performances in a horror film.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest.
So do you agree it's a horror? I mean, you can say.
Yeah, yeah. Totally agree it's horror. Because it's one man's journey into hell.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. You can argue he's already there from the start.
I can't argue with that at all. I think you're absolutely right.
It's a film that should be watched, by the way, everyone.
Yeah,
Angel Heart,
completely.
If you haven't seen it.
And I haven't ruined anything. I haven't ruined it at all. But you absolutely need to watch. If you haven't seen Angel Heart, definitely do. And by all accounts and purposes, the Blu-ray transfer on this now.
Really?
The recent Blu-ray. I think there's a Criterion release as well.
Oh, okay.
It's absolutely stunning. It's a beautiful film.
Oh, it's, yeah, yeah.
It's beautifully shot.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, by all means, please do seek out
Lisa Bonet is stunning in that as well.
She's so good.
From the Cosbys. The daughter from the Cosbys.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You, the big booty, get out from the Robert Niro.
two French films. One of them was very close to being.
I can't believe I did my Bill Cosby impression on this podcast.
It was bizarre.
Brilliant. Please shit these films out.
Okay, Martyrs, which you said you started watching but stopped watching. French film.
Couldn't get on with it.
If you like your horror hardcore, Martyrs and Switchblade Romance, The Descent.
Oh, The Descent, we got to talk about The Descent.
Yep, okay.
Most claustrophobic film I've ever seen.
Mate, I went to cinema to see this, and I'm pretty claustrophobic.
I saw it in cinema.
And it's that scene where the girl is going through the little hole. They're all going through a hole in a cave underground, and she gets stuck with a helmet.
And she has to take the helmet off.
And it's cracking. You can hear the helmet grinding against the stone. And she's freaking out, and they're going, just move forward, just move forward. And she's so paralysed with fear, she can't move forward. I've never been more uncomfortable in a cinema in my life.
I must have watched it a couple of times at home since then, and it still makes me feel like I'm in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
It is just the most tense film. Yeah. I just can't understand how they made it that. I mean, the performances are phenomenal as well.
Yeah.
They're really good. Yeah. And I think it benefits.
And it benefits from an all woman cast.
It does. And it also benefits from an all woman cast that you don't recognise.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Because then you don't know who's going to live, who's going to die.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you bear no allegiance with any particular character in particular.
Yeah.
And all the characters are really well levelled. You don't think like, oh, look, the really pretty one's going to live.
Yeah.
Because they're all okay.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think, oh, the really funny ones, because they're okay. They all seem like normal people.
And
there's no picking out of favourites, and there's no particular leader in any sense. It is just a fantastic film. For the purpose that it levels all of the characters.
And it's got a wicked car crash at the start of one of them loses her husband.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a proper fuck moment in cinema. I saw that, I was like, fuck!
Is that the horror?
Well,
yeah. You think, is that it?
Yeah. That's horrific enough.
Yeah,
but
totally,
for that poor woman to go through that. And that's why they go to the cabin to get her mind off the fact she's lost her husband in such a horrific way, and for them to all go through what they go through in those tunnels.
Yeah.
It's a great, and it's British, and it's Neil Marshall, and it's just up there, isn't it? Mm. It really is up there.
It's interesting that they do such a brilliant job at the start of the film of establishing this that tragedy.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the film is such a complete sea change to that.
Yeah,
it's not like this is one other thing that happened, but this is completely fantastical. But this is completely something that's in reality. So if you think about it, anyone could be in a car.
Imagine watching that film not knowing what you're about to watch, knowing nothing about it.
I couldn't.
It would blow your mind.
I don't think Natalie knows anything about this film.
Oh.
And I have it on Blu-ray.
See, now Sally knows nothing about it, but if I put it on, I'd get stabbed in the chest at the end.
I don't think Natalie would even get past, like, because it's actually really tense until they get
the whole film's tense. You know something's going on. And if you don't know anything about it, the foreboding.
Maybe that's the brilliance of it, because the release is at the start. Because it's tense up until the point where the car accident happens, and it's horrific, and then it's like a release. It's like it releases the tension, and then it builds from there. So maybe there's that sense of like, oh, that's done. Let's see what's next, and then it just gets fucking exponentially worse.
And again, the ambiguous ending as well. If you remember, you don't know whether someone's escaped or whether they're still down. I don't know if you remember the ending.
I've got a copy that's got a couple of endings.
I didn't know it was a couple of endings.
Well, they famously changed the ending
in
dramatically
America.
For the American audience.
Of course
audience.
They would, though. Because that one was quite grim, if I remember.
Yeah.
The American one
is worse.
Really?
It is worse. It is a lot worse.
Fuck, man, that's surprising.
But it's worse in a very particular way, in that it gives you a happy ending and then it fucks you.
No, that's the ending I've seen then. I don't want to ruin it, because this is a kind of film that not many people would see. Okay. I don't think we're talking
maybe
about
got,
this.
Maybe I've got the mixed up then.
No, I think you've got it spot on. I think the ending you're talking about is the ending I've seen.
Okay,
but I don't want to ruin it because this is a film that probably not many people have seen.
Yeah, like, I think it's suffered.
I think the thing.
Sorry, I was just going to say. I think it's suffered from the fact that there's been it had a fucked up release, and it suffered from the fact that there was too many cuts released too soon.
Right.
But the fact that neither of us know which ending we've seen.
Well, we'll talk about this. I think we should talk. Me and you should talk about the ending off.
We'll talk about off mic. And we'll talk about next show. We'll talk about what we actually know for sure. I think that's a good.
This is a film that if. I don't think a lot of people have seen, to be honest, because it's British and it's quite cultish.
It's niche. It's definitely niche. Yeah.
And it should be seen. Yeah. If you're a horror fan, 100%. This should definitely be seen.
You're absolutely right.
Let the Right One In. You're going to stop me there, aren't you? No?
I'm not going to stop you there because it's just fantastic and I think everyone should just see it. That's as much as I'm going to say.
Suspiria.
I think it's aged. I'm going to stop you. I'm just going to say I think it's aged. It's got one of the best... I'd say it's... easily in the top three horror scores.
Yeah, the score by Goblin.
The score is just phenomenal. And do you know what? Even if you don't want to see the film, just download the score and listen to it on your journey into and out of work. Because the score's actually really short and it repeats twice.
It's quite evil, isn't it? It's an evil score.
Well, it's very short and they repeat a lot of the motifs over and over. I think it's only about 35 to 40 minutes long. Like of unique material.
Oh, okay.
So listen to it on your way to work and have the worst day at work you've ever had. Just face it, if you live in London, your journey takes an hour anyway.
It's a Dario Argento film, and if you know anything about horror, I think if you don't know about Dario Argento now, maybe not bother.
No, yeah, I think you're right.
Not bother. But when I was a kid, Dario Argento was the man.
The master, yeah.
Yeah, him and Lucio Fulci were the men. Anyway, right. I'll save this one. Cherry Falls.
Never seen it.
Which is really good. Dawn of the Room, I said. Scream, The Omen, From Beyond, House by the Cemetery, The Beyond, and Zombie Flesh. It's all the Lucio Fulci films again.
Zombie Flesh is fantastic.
Yeah.
Is that the one with a shark versus zombie?
Yes, Shark vs. Zombie. Yeah, yeah. Zombie Flesh it is, yeah. I mean, these are really dated films, but if you're a proper... If you're knocking on 40 like I am, and you're a horror fan, you will know who Lucio Fulci is. And if you don't, maybe it's too late.
Although I would caveat that with... Yeah. If you want to complete your knowledge of... They're films that you need to watch. But they're not going to feature in your top.
Yeah, I didn't want to sound clever or anything, but no, it's a childhood thing for me.
Yeah, but they definitely complete your puzzle of horror history.
Yeah, if you want to go from 1 to 10, you need Lucio Fulci.
Yeah, you need to see Fulci films. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Okay. They all feature fantastic scores. I will add that.
Yeah, I just want to say a big thing about two films that really got me in the last 3 years, actually. One was House of the Devil and The Innkeepers.
Ooh,
and I've
seen it.
And they're two films by Ty West.
Oh, okay.
Who, The Innkeepers was so good that I actually went on Ty West's face page and wrote him a letter about how impressed I was with his knowledge of horror and how he'd sort of reinvented the genre again for me and fantastic. Gave my love of film again. Never replied back. I was probably drunk.
What a cunt.
But it was a long old letter.
No, good on you, man.
Yeah, The Innkeepers, it's a two-hander. It's two people in true life that is one of the most haunted hotels in America. And this hotel's closing down and they're just in there as two staff running it down. There's a couple of people. Mm. Kelly McGillis is one of the people in there. It's just a two-hander. And it's terrifying. It absolutely freaked me out. And it's just the characterisation of the film. And the other one he done, the first one, was House by the Devil, which is literally like a 1980s, almost like Rosemary's Baby, The Omen homage. Which is stunning. I mean, I'll tell you how much an 80s film was. They even released it on VHS as a homage to VHS horrors. I mean, this is about three or four years ago.
Beautiful.
They are stunning films, Alan. If you haven't seen them, watch them. But the thing is, I lent them to a couple of horror fans and they hated The Innkeepers. They actually phoned me up and said, what the fuck? That film was shit.
Really?
And it really, it upset me, because I just, not upset me, but, you know, I was, oh, disappointed that that's, because Ty West, I just love him. Pet Sematary, Cabin Fever, Eli Roth, Cabin in the Woods, we're talking about Hills Have Eyes, Kindred, that you've probably never heard of.
Oh, no, I've never heard of it, yeah.
Neil knows what I'm talking about. Kindred was a 98...
Friend of Scattershot, Neil.
Yeah, it was like a 98... Like Reanimator and Kindred, all those kind of films going from Beyond. They were all like in the mid-80s, and they were really nasty, horrible films, but probably shit if you watch them now. And yeah, and The Devil's Backbone, that's me lot, mate. That's... Oh, The Fly. Did I mention The Fly?
No,
yeah.
We didn't.
Did I mention The Fly?
Yeah.
The Fly as well. And Halloween. That's it.
Let's talk about The Fly for a little bit.
Yeah, let's talk about The Fly.
The Fly, I really loved The Fly, and I say that in the past tense, because I was a real big advocate of that when I was at school. I used to tell people to, you know, oh, The Fly's fantastic. It's amazing.
Yeah.
We're talking about the remake, obviously.
Oh yeah, of course. With Jeff Goldblum. Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, I won't do my impression.
Do your David Cronenberg impression.
I'll do my David Lynch impression. Do we do it?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Hello, I'm David Lynch. I like to talk about you and the films. That's David Lynch. There you go.
Take your word for it. I've never heard him.
He does a spoken word albums now. He's a musician rather than a...
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah.
What was the name of his album? I actually downloaded it and I listened to it. It's called like The Day the Clown Died. He was like, I'd like to talk to you about the day the clown died.
So he's gone happy in his old age, is he?
He's a miserable monster. Hey,
yeah.
But yeah, The Fly, it's got some amazing effects in it. It's still really rank.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's really rank, but it's terribly unevenly paced.
Yeah, he had that. Cronenberg had that problem with all his films. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you've seen Shivers. And Rabid.
I mean,
Shivers is a disturbing film, but again, unevenly paced.
It's almost as if he just came up with some really good scenes.
Yeah.
And then just wrapped up.
But it was always about body horror, which I liked all that. I like that. I mean, Videodrome. I don't know if you've seen Videodrome.
Yeah. I love Videodrome.
James Woods.
Yeah.
I mean, that invasion of your body. And The Fly was the quintessential body invasion film.
Absolutely right. I couldn't have put it better. You're absolutely correct. It's body horror. And now with The Fly, it's so unevenly paced that you get this. I'd say the first 45 minutes of it are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. He sets the scenario around, but then he just draws it out a little bit too long, and it's almost as if it should have been. If you could knock 30 minutes out of that film, it would be as tight and brilliant as it could be. But it still wouldn't be. That horrific, because it's almost like a montage. The film is just basically a montage.
Yeah, and of someone transforming.
Yeah, and that's it. It's basically, oh, this thing happens, and then you turn into a fly.
What's the story? I think that's screaming out for a remake, like a proper, hardcore 18 remake of The Fly. I really do.
Let's go on Facebook and send Zack Snyder a message. He seems all right at doing that.
Yeah, he loves a remake.
He does love a remake. I'm going to tell you a couple of mine.
Yes, yeah, couple please. Of
my I had in my also rounds The Revenant.
It's on there. I was going to say.
I know it's on yours.
I'll leave this to the end. Yeah. I mean, we should talk about The Revenant.
Yeah. I think you're a bigger fan of it than I am.
I really? I thought you...
I know. I love it. But I think you've seen it more than I have. I haven't watched it more than once simply because of the throwing up
stuff. I'll be honest. I've only seen it twice.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of throwing up in it.
Yeah. There's throwing up black blood and stuff.
Yeah.
The Revenant is basically It's almost like a cross between a zombie and a vampire film.
Yeah.
But it's a buddy film as well. It is absolutely dyed-in-the-wool horror comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Hilariously funny.
Yeah.
It is properly funny.
And we're talking about a proper independent horror film
that
I'd be surprised if anyone's heard of it, to be honest. It's one of them. Unless you're a proper horror fan.
Yeah,
I think we found this... through our love of horror rather than hearing about it.
It was you that told me that.
We hunted it.
Yeah. I mean, it was you that told me that told me that you'd seen it. I first heard about it through Ain't It Cool News. But it was one of those things where like I just read a review and it was just like, oh, well, you know, they like it, but they like fucking everything because they're movie geeks. But as soon as Colin tells me something about it, he goes, oh, you have to watch this, then...
Well, it's vice versa, mate.
Yeah, I have to watch it. And yeah, it is phenomenal. It's got
and the payoff at the end.
Yeah,
That's mind blowing, that ending, isn't it?
It's stunning.
You're like, fuck me.
The whole film is surprise after surprise after surprise.
You don't know where it's going, do you?
No, completely not. And I don't think we should ruin anything.
No.
Because it's, as much as I've said, it's like a zombie vampire thing. That's not...
It's not doing it justice.
That's not the film. Just kind of giving you a taster of what to expect in some kind of way.
But there is some great, great independent horror out there.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the top ones.
Yeah, that absolutely. And that's a recent one as well.
Oh, it's very recent.
Yeah. And my next one...
Yep.
And I'm gonna say my last one at this point, is something that I'm surprised isn't on your list.
Okay, it's gonna... Cause you know what? I'm gonna go, oh, fuck. Oh, no. Because it should be on there, shouldn't it? Go on.
Cube.
Oh, fuck.
If you've never seen Cube...
Oh.
Cube is just the absolute best. It's a very, very small... I'm not gonna get my phone in my pocket. I think it's Australian. I'm just gonna say I think it's Australian.
Yeah, I know you're right.
The premise is, the film starts and there's a room. It's four walls, a ceiling and a floor. And you've got a number of people in there. I want to say six or eight.
Yeah, something like that.
Eight would make sense because it's eight walls.
Yeah, maybe. Soon whittles down.
No, maybe six walls. No, I don't know. There's a number of people in there and they've all got different attributes. There's some people who are clever.
And they all wake up.
Yeah, they all these people are asleep. And the beginning of the film is these people just wake up in a room. And it's a room, completely sealed room. There's no door, no window, nothing. And they try and none of them know why they're there. And they just have to try and realise why they're there. I'm trying to say this without trying to spoil too much, because the beauty of this film is discovering what actually happens.
It's a puzzle box of a film.
Well, there you go. That's as perfect as it could be. It is a puzzle box of a film. It's just peeling back the layers of things, and you discover what this film is about as the characters in the film discover what the film is about. And the film feels as claustrophobic and as dangerous as anything I can think about. And it's low budget, but
low budget is filmed in one room, isn't it?
It is filmed in one room.
I mean, but it doesn't feel like that.
No.
At all.
No, absolutely not.
And that's the genius of that.
Yeah. It is such a large scope to what this film achieves.
And a wicked payoff.
Amazing payoff. Absolutely amazing. It's something that many people had. Every person I've recommended the Cube to just say, "What? What's that film?" And the many times they go, "Fucking hell, that's amazing!" So if you've never seen Cube, grab it. Now, what I'm going to say is, there's two sequels to this, as far as I know.
Yeah.
You got Cube 2, Hypercube, which is actually all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. And you got Cube Zero, which is
a good film,
which is absolutely wicked.
Yeah,
and it is the. What they've done is they've followed the model of Ringu.
They've
taken the first one, which is a great concept, an amazing film, and they've escalated that into the second one. Now what they've done is, from the second one, which isn't as good as the first, is that they've gone back to the start and explained what's happened, explained the more of the story and fleshed out, and in doing so they've made the first and the second films better.
Yeah.
And that is only a thing that happens in horror films.
Yeah.
I urge you, the listener, to come back at me with other kind of genres where that happens, where you have an original film, an original idea, an original vision, a sequel, and then a prequel which improves both of those films.
Yeah.
This happens a lot in games. It happens a lot in video games. Yeah. Absolutely. But not in films. The only two instances I can think of is Ringu, the Japanese original, and Cube. I just think,
do you know what? I forgot Saw. I don't know if Saw's a horror.
It is a horror,
but I loved that film. The original. Just the original.
Yeah. although
I think it's wicked.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Although you could argue the original is more psychological.
Yeah, it's more psychological thriller. Yeah. I mean, Silence of the Lambs as well. I was toing and froing with that as a horror as well, and Seven as well. I said, are these horrors? Are these thrillers? And
it's an interesting it's an interesting point you raise actually, because what's the where does the line?
Well, this is what I'm saying about the definition of horror. This is what I'm trying to get out at the start.
Is it horrific thriller?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think
I'd put them in thrillers.
Yeah, I would put them in thrillers.
But they're fucking horrific.
Yeah, totally.
Especially Saw. I mean, if there was, out of them three, Saw's more of a horror than Silence of the Lambs and Seven. But I don't know.
But you could argue because the horror doesn't actually happen to the characters in the film, to the protagonists.
Yeah.
So it's merely told in almost like flashback.
Or
exposition rather. With Silence of the Lambs, no, I'd say
it's a psychological horror, isn't it? Sorry, psychological thriller.
It's a thriller.
Yeah, it's a thriller, isn't
it? There's very little gore that happens in that film.
Yeah, the guards scene with Hannibal Lecter and wrapping him up. That's the only gore you see, really.
It's a bit rank, but it's not horrific.
Yeah,
it's arguably action. Anything with James Gunn, you don't really see. Put the lotion in the basket.
Put the fucking lotion in the basket, Colin.
It rubs the lotion on its skin.
It rubs the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the holes again.
These films we've mentioned, even the ones I've just shat out, I haven't mentioned one that you shouldn't watch if you haven't seen them.
Yeah, completely.
So if there's any on there, maybe Suspiria, maybe the Argento films and Lucio Fulci ones, I'll give you if you don't want to watch them. But any other film we've mentioned, we haven't mentioned a shit horror. We're not doing today, like we did with comics, like the shit or the weakest ones. We're not doing that because there's too many of them. What we've mentioned here are the best horrors you can find out.
Yeah, completely.
So if you haven't seen any of them, just give one or two a go, and if you like them, give the rest a go.
Yeah, completely.
Because if you like our top five or any of the top five we like, you'll love some of the films on there also, Rance.
Perfect. There's no better way I could finish this podcast. I think that is an absolutely fantastic way to wrap this up. So what we're going to do is
we're going to drink a couple of bottles of wine.
Yeah, we're going to drink a couple of bottles of wine, so we weren't going to talk about horror films.
And watch the England game.
Yeah. I imagine we lost. It's fine. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to list every single one of the films that me and Colin have mentioned in this film. In a couple of postings on Facebook. What I want you to do, loyal, fantastic listeners of this podcast, is to share this with your with the people that you are friends with on Facebook. Because, you know, obviously we post these things on Facebook. So what I'll do is I will list every single horror film that we have discussed on this.
Yeah. I promise you, if you mention some of the films to your friends that we've mentioned on this podcast and they watch them, they're going to think you're the bollocks for mentioning it to them.
Absolutely. That is the beauty of listening to stuff like this, is that you're going to listen to something, you're going to find something that you didn't know about, and then you're going to tell someone, and they're going to love it as well.
And they're going to thank you for it.
They're going to thank you, and they're going to tell someone, and you're going to get the credit, and that's what it's all about. So please do share this, share the post with all your friends on Facebook, and just tell people in the street, just go up to someone, grab by the fucking nape of the neck, and just say, you watch Cube, you cunt, you don't listen to this, but you want to know about it, because it's awesome.
Yeah, and the trial for that's coming up soon, Alan might not be in the next podcast.
I'm going to get in a cab in a minute, and then someone's just going to stab me, so that'd be fine, that'd be a horror in itself. So thank you for listening to episode 12 of Scattershot.
It feels like we've been doing it for a long
forever. if you'd like to get involved in the podcast, me and Colin are more than welcome to.
We'd
love a guest. Bring a guest. Just drop us an email or a message on Facebook, and
we won't buy it.
No, we don't buy it. All are welcome. And that's enough for the part two of the horror special.
Back to reviews next week. For a while.
Back to reviews for a little while. Please do send in your recommendations, top fives, if that's something you want to do, or anything you want us to cover. Any particular films or anything you want our opinions on. So that's enough from me, Alan Porter.
Colin Briscoe.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.